Thank you. I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a real alcoholic. I bring my own bottle. I thought it was kind of funny when I looked at the program and it said I was the young people's speaker. And I'm looking at these folks up here and I'm thinking I'm older than all of them combined. And somebody told me it was young at heart. I said my heart is very old too. I don't know. And then I was sitting up here, though, I figured it out. Unless you plan better, this is the time that the old people are napping. So this would be a time during a conference that the young people would be in the meeting. So that's why they call it the young people's meeting. It has nothing to do with anything else. And I'll tell you what, Susan was talking about the All California Young People's Conference. And if you've never had an opportunity to attend that event, when it's here in Sacramento, please make a plan, an effort to go. If you want to see enthusiasm and energy in Alcoholics Anonymous, the All California Young People's Conference is the place to go. We had it in Southern California in January, and I was there for about an hour and a half. I had to lay down in the aisle and take a nap. I just it exhausted me just being in the middle of that enthusiasm and that energy. So if you have an opportunity to go, please make an effort. It's quite an experience you should not miss. And if you were here last night, Craig just, God, what a great opening. I'm at our Friday night talk. I know somebody talked earlier, but I was flying here and they didn't pipe it into United Airlines. What a great talk Craig gave last night. I thought, God, this gives a whole new definition to the diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Jeez, I mean, it was, woo. And the signer, I really commend you, too, on having a signer here. I always think that it's a high-class conference when you have somebody here signing. She asked me if I would speak slowly. Apparently, her arms have not recovered yet from Craig. I was watching her when he was talking, and he's going like this, and she's going like this. And I was anyway, I'm really pleased to be here. Some of you have heard me talk before. I like to wear silk because I like to touch myself, and so I do that a lot while I'm talking, and a while ago, I learned that it's not safe to carry fire with you if you touch yourself a lot. I used to, one night I was sharing in a meeting and I was touching myself and I had a lighter in my pocket and I don't know how it ignited, but it sparked while I was talking. And I'll tell you what, it does not take a lot of spark for silk to ignite. I mean, before I even knew it, I was aflame at the podium and I'm first aid certified. I know it's stop, drop, and roll. So I hit the floor. I'm a compulsive talker, so I took the microphone with me. Rolled myself out. Never missed a word of my talk. Interestingly, nobody in the room bothered to come see if I was okay. Once I was put out, I just got back up, put the microphone in, and kept talking. Probably one of the first near-nude meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I learned from that experience. You taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous that I only have to experience it once. If I don't like the results, I can choose to take different actions. So ever since then, I make sure when I get up and talk that I don't have any fire in my pocket. If I accidentally have a lighter or matches, I take them out and remove them. That way I'm free to touch myself during the whole talk, and I don't have to worry, but recently I've learned that I have to remove my pager when I talk, and I put it on vibrate when I talk because I think it's a courtesy. If your phone goes off during the meeting, I just think it's a courtesy if you put your pager on vibrate, and I've learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. But the problem with that for me is I had it on vibrate, and I was talking, didn't want to interrupt myself, and I was sharing one night, and it went off. And I was standing on a stage, and the stage dropped, right, not far behind the speaker, and I was talking, and the pager went off and it scared me. And I jumped backwards and I fell right off the stage. And I hadn't had a chance to take the microphone with me. So ever since then, I take my pager off when I share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, what's next? I don't have very many dangerous things left on me this afternoon. So I think we're pretty safe today. I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not going to hurt any of these young people sitting up here next to me. They're far enough away that if I flail... See, they're coming into AA a lot brighter than we were, you know? I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the laughter in the room in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't love the laughter when I first came here. I didn't understand the laughter when I first came here. I didn't think there was one thing to be laughing about. But I love the laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because in retrospect, I can tell you that it was the laughter in the rooms that began to heal me long before your love could touch me. I'd hear people say things like, you loved me until I could love myself. And I thought, please do not love me. Please do not love me. And your love couldn't touch me. But it was the laughter that began to heal me long before that I recovered enough that your love could begin to heal me. And I love the laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I prefer it when it's at your expense, but... I had my first drink of alcohol when I was 13 years old. I didn't mean to wait that long. We got people coming into Alcoholics Anonymous at 13. If you want to talk about young people, I work with young people, and one of the thoughts, I like to share my thought process with you because I think a lot. I think all the time. I'm talking to you, I'm thinking about something else. And then I start thinking about the fact that I'm thinking, then I start thinking I shouldn't be thinking what I'm thinking, and what I'm thinking while I'm thinking what I shouldn't be thinking, and then I try not to think about it. Am I going too fast for you? Okay. Then I try not to think about what I'm thinking, and I'll tell you, I'm grateful I don't have a loudspeaker on my head so that everything I thought came barreling out. I mean, that would be truly humiliating, but I think all the time. I don't even know where they come from, some of my thoughts. A lot of my thoughts have no input from anywhere. They just pop in there. Solutions to problems just pop in my head all the time. Most of the time, the solution is worse than the problem. But I think all this stuff. And what I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I share my thinking with you. Before I take an action now, I share my thinking with you. Not you specifically, but usually my sponsor, she gets a great kick out of most of it, but I kind of run it by. And one of the things I was thinking as young people speaker, I work with young people, and I'm thinking, God, I got to go see if there's a thrift store around here somewhere, because if I'm going to be the young people speaker, I need to wear very large clothes that have no relationship to my body size. And then I probably should shave my head. A one with a Bic would be good. Just shave it all off. Tattoo most of me. Pierce parts of my body that God never intended to be pierced. That look like it truly would hurt when they pierce it. This is what I'm thinking. I'm in the hotel room. I'm by myself. I'm coming up with my solution. And fortunately, I used to wear my garage door opener so I looked important. Now I just wear all kinds of toys. And fortunately, I called my sponsor before I took action on any of my solutions to this dilemma I seem to be having. And her direction to me was, Patty, do not leave your room until 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, you may leave your room and walk directly to the conference center. Do not stop. Do not talk to anyone. Keep walking. And so I arrived here, and I still have all my hair. I have no tattoos, and nothing is pierced, and my clothes fit relatively well. As a result of direction from a kind and loving sponsor, as a result of having the experience of following that direction that didn't seem to have any importance in my life, direction that had no relevance to my problems. As a result of practicing that, as a result of acting contrary to how I felt, Do you know, my sponsor doesn't care how I feel. She in fact reminds me on a regular basis, there is no chapter in the big book into feeling. The chapter in the book is into action. She doesn't care how I feel. I don't feel like going to the meeting tonight. I don't care. I don't feel like picking that newcomer up. I don't care. It's what's the action. And as a result of learning to follow direction and do right action, I'm in here tonight with, I would have been so upset on Monday morning if I had holes this big in my earlobe as a result of my solution to the dilemma that I found myself. And my son has holes this big in his earlobe. They look okay when those plugs are in. They call them plugs. They don't even call them earrings. When the plugs are in there, they look okay. When he takes them out, he does it only to make, see how, if I'll go, when he takes, you really do have a hole this big. And now he lives in San Francisco. He's talking about enlarging them. I said, what are you going to enlarge them for? Right now, they're this big. But anyway, that would have been how I would have ended up here today. Except that I've learned how to take direction. And I don't even know why I went there. I usually don't talk about following direction. I think it's, you know why you sponsor people, though? I'm 51. I'm just going to tell you right up front. I have every right to go anywhere I want. I can just... I can start here in the middle of the sentence, go there, middle of the paragraph, slide over there, never get back to where I started from. That's the advantage of not drinking and not dying. You just get to live long enough to be in this place. You know why I sponsor people? There's this incredible advantage to sponsor. Oh, you hear things like, it just adds to my recovery. Just, blah, 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 blah. I learn how to get out of myself. I'm selfish and self-centered. Gives me a way to, that's for the more spiritual than I. This is why I sponsor people. I give somebody I sponsor a direction and I watch them. They do it and I watch them. And if it works for them, maybe I'll try it. All right. I had my first drink when I was 13 years old and I'm really sorry I waited that long. But I grew up in an alcoholic home, but I didn't know it was alcoholism. I mean, I thought my dad was weird. I thought my mom was nuts. I didn't know it was alcoholism. I didn't know what alcohol would do to me or for me. I didn't have any illusions about alcohol. I don't remember ever thinking, boy, I can't wait until I drink, and I never thought I would never drink. I mean, I just don't think I ever thought about alcohol one way or another. And yet when I was 13 years old, I was on a camping trip with a group of girls. We were camped on the beach just south of Oceanside. And when we got into the tent that first night, I had a bottle of vodka in my pillowcase. And to this day, I don't know where that bottle came from. I believe it was the grace of God, but I can never be sure. But I remember taking the bottle out of the pillowcase, and I remember being excited about having it. And I didn't know what alcohol would do to me or for me, but I remembered being excited about having it. And I asked if anybody wanted any, and they didn't. And the reason they gave me for not wanting any is all we had to mix with it was grape soda and root beer. And I said, well, so what? And I drank half the bottle, and I looked around the tent. Nothing had gotten different, and nothing had changed, so I drank the second half of the bottle, and that was to be the end of my social drinking. Never again after that day did I ever offer anybody a drink out of my bottle. And I don't know about anybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never had resentments until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never had resentments out there. I never had resentments until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of my early resentments in Alcoholics Anonymous is I heard you talk about your first drink. And you talked about taking the drink. And you felt this magic in your mouth. And you felt this warmth as it went down your throat. And you could literally talk about feeling it as it went all the way down. And it hit your stomach, and when it hit your stomach, it exploded and went to your fingernails and your toenails, and your pimples fell off, and you grew a few inches, and you lost some weight, and you became, Lady Di and Prince Charles. Wonderful things happened to you. And that wasn't the case for me. I had my first drink of alcohol, and absolutely nothing happened to me for about 15 minutes. And at the end of the 15 minutes, the only thing that happened to me is I had to go to the bathroom. And it's my belief this afternoon that if you were to drink a quart of anything in about 15 minutes you would have to go to the bathroom. So I got out of the tent, and we were on the beach. I shuffled down through the sand to the outhouse. I went in and went to the bathroom. And when I got done and went to get up, I realized I was absolutely, totally, 100% paralyzed to the toilet seat. I couldn't move. I couldn't even blink. I didn't feel my heart beating, and I was overcome with a sense of fear. And of course, the fear was that somebody else was going to have to come use that outhouse, and there I was, paralyzed to the toilet seat. Now, later in my drinking, I did discover that two people can use the same toilet at the same time if the second person is very careful about what they're doing. But I didn't know that at 13. But I did somehow. It is a visual, isn't it? I intuitively knew that the body was made up of energy. And I somehow figured that if I could gather my energy, I would be all right. So I suppose it was my first formal meditation. I sat and I gathered my energy. And when it seemed to be all in one place, when it seemed to be centrally located, when I seemed to have it all kind of balled up, I just sort of fell off the toilet into the sand and started crawling back to the tent. Now, y'all know, since coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have discovered that my entire problem that night was my attitude. If my attitude would have been right, I could have had a fantasy. I was in the Marines. I was being dive-bombed as I was trying to get back to safety. And if my attitude would have been right, it could have been a wonderful experience. Now, in my own defense, I always have to say my pants were still down at my ankles. I had started to get sick. I couldn't quite get through it. I couldn't get around it. And I, under those circumstances, I think it's a little difficult to have a good attitude. I did somehow manage to get back to the tent. I fell in and I passed out. And when I came to in the morning, I realized nobody was in the tent with me, and I couldn't figure out where they went until my eyes cleared enough that I realized I'd been sick all night long. I'd hit the top of the tent, the side of the tent. You're like, what? You've never been sick, right? I hadn't missed a square inch in that tent, and quite frankly, I didn't want to be in there either, so I got out. And that was my first drink of alcohol, and it was the most wonderful, incredible, marvelous, magnificent, fabulous, spiritual experience I'd ever had. And it must have been, because I put some amount of alcohol into my body from that day until the day I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't always get drunk, and I didn't always drink the kinds of things that you would classify as a beverage. I drank a lot of vanilla extract. I used to buy it by the six-pack. I'll never forget the day the guy at the market called me over and he said, Patty, I can't let you buy vanilla extract anymore. He says, I can't believe anybody bakes as much as you do. And I got cut off from my supply. I drank a lot of mouthwash. I drank a lot of perfume. Taboo became my after-dinner drink of choice. Somebody in AA say to me, how could you drink that? It tasted so bad. I thought, well, how could you drink gin? I mean, it didn't taste so good either, but and I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm often tempted when I share to introduce myself and say, I'm Patty and I'm a pig. Because I ate, drank, shot, snorted, shoved, crammed, rammed anything into me that made me feel different than how I felt. I mean, I'm the person that came to your house and ate and drank everything in your bathroom. I mean, that, but but alcohol is my drug of choice. I love alcohol. And what drug of choice means for me is if there's some Jack Daniels here, some marijuana, some cocaine, some Valium, some stuff, drug of choice means I drink the Jack Daniels first, and then I do everything else. And I don't know I'm living any different than anybody else. I don't know that other people don't live the way that I do. And you know, how would I know that? We weren't talking about it. I mean, nobody was sitting around chatting about it. I was a bar drinker. I was a living room drinker, an alley drinker, store drinker, car drinker, dumpster drinker, park drinker, an office drinker. I mean, I didn't specialize. I just drank. But I love bars. I love sleazy, sleazy bars. I mean, really sleazy bars with the sawdust on the floor, the big old mirrors that are cracked and you have to kind of dip around to see yourself in there. The bar has, you know, the upholstery around the bar is kind of ripped where people have tried to hold on as they're falling off their bar stool, and they're full of smoke, and they have that wonderful used booze urine smell that I salivate. Still, I love that smell. Sometimes when I'm at work and I'm like in a really cranky mood, I'll drive over to one of those joints. I'll just kind of open the door and take a big hit off of it, and it, like, perks me right up. And kind of, it's a little bit different smell now. They don't let you smoke in bars, I understand. And I don't know. I guess it's a good law. I don't know what the point is. But the bars that I drank in, I mean, a guy would turn around and take a piss in a corner. Now they can't smoke a cigarette. I mean, I don't smoke, but I don't understand either. So, but you know what I think about? I mean, I in retrospect, and all of this is in retrospect. I mean, I did not know that this was all going to be so important. I did not know when I was out there practicing, which I think is kind of a strange word for what we do. But because I didn't need much more practice, but I didn't know when I was out there that I was going to end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know when I was out there that what it was like was going to be important. I didn't know when I was out there that I was going to be expected someday to report it to you. If I had known when I was out there that I was going to end up here this afternoon, I'd have paid more attention to my life. If I'd have known about a fourth and fifth step, I can guarantee you I would not have done some of the things that I did. But I didn't know any of it was important, so I didn't pay a lot of attention. I'm also a blackout drinker. I love blackouts. I love blackouts. I wish I could have a blackout sober. I love blackouts. I don't understand people that come to AA in a panic. They're at their first meeting. They're sweating. They're nervous. They're panicked. They finally get a chance to say something, and they start telling us about this panic that they're in because last night I was in this bar, and I was drinking, and it was 9 o'clock, and I ordered a martini, and I was halfway through the martini, and next thing I knew, I was at home, and it was 1 in the morning, and I don't know what happened to those 4 hours, and it scared me so bad that, well, here I am in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't understand those people. I love blackouts. I found it thrilling to leave work on March 4th, go back to work on March 20th, and discover I'd been there the entire time. I just find that incredibly thrilling. I mean, and it made the time between paychecks go so much quicker. But and I wish I could do that sober. I love black. I just wish I could have a blackout like that sober. But in retrospect, thinking about those bars, we were not sitting around those places having conversations like, well, what do you prefer, the red mouthwash or the green? Well, what's your preference, Chantilly or Aqua Velva? We weren't having those kinds of conversations, so it doesn't occur to me I'm living any different than anybody else. I think I drink because I want to drink. I don't know that I don't have a choice. I don't know that at 13 years old I put alcohol into an alcoholic body, and from that day on I had no choice. I think I drink because I want to drink. And I don't know that my life is any different than anybody else's. And I went to college. I graduated from San Diego State with a 3.8 grade point average, a chronic, hopeless, helpless alcoholic, drinking on a daily basis. And the only reason I share that with you is it almost killed me when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I got here and I told you I was too smart to be an alcoholic. Nobody with a 3.8 grade point average could possibly be an alcoholic. I stayed at San Diego and took classes for a master's degree. I left college and went immediately into the profession of my choice. I rose very quickly to the top. And that, too, almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous because I told you I was too successful to be an alcoholic. I told you about the big oak desk I sat behind. I told you about the trophies and the plaques. What I didn't tell you about was I was in the newspaper business, and we often gave awards. And I know this afternoon it was because God gave me a gift. We often won awards. And what I didn't tell you about was the time that I would be behind a podium much like this, come out of a blackout. Sometimes blackouts were a little iffy, I mean, when you came out of them, but I liked them in Vegas because you could just look down at the black, you know, you look at down and the blackjack table tells you where you are, but I would come out of a blackout behind a podium in a room full of people holding an award, not knowing if I was giving it or receiving it. And so I would say thank you, and I would go sit down, and then somebody would elbow me and tell me I was presenting it to the Junior Women's League, and I'd have to get up and start over again. But I didn't tell you about that. I just told you I was too successful to be an alcoholic. I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 26 years old. 24 years ago, that was young in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is not young anymore. But but I told you I was too young to be an alcoholic. Everybody in the room was old. I mean, like about the age I am now. They were all old, and I was too young to be an alcoholic. And those things almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I arrived here. Now it's time to start taking my clothes off. Oh, thank you. Somebody I've been with before, apparently. I'm going to tell you, guys don't know about this, but this is like no estrogen and no alcohol. It is really bad. I mean, phew, you got it to look forward to. Boy, I'll tell you. I don't think you can die of a hot flash, but you can come awfully close to it. I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a driving problem. I'm the kind, I get arrested. I'm driving down the road minding my own business. Now, I don't know about anybody else that got pulled over by the police, but, I mean, most of us, I mean, me particularly, I just wanted to get home. I mean, I've had a hard day at work. I've had to go to the bar because I'm in the newspaper business and writers drink. You have to go to the bar. That's where the leads are. That's where the news happens. You have to go. And that's kind of, I mean, part of, some of that's the truth. I did get a lot of leads in bars. The problem was I would write the notes on those stupid little napkins. The glass would sweat. The ink would run. In the morning, I'm looking at it. I can't read it. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I've got to go back there again tonight. I hope that guy's there again. I mean, I hope, you know, geez, I can't even read this stuff that I have to go back. I mean, it was like required of the job. Well, I did one time, though, I have to tell you, one time I broke this really huge story. One of our school board members was having a married man, six kids, an extramarital affair. 30 years ago, that was news. Today, it's almost required. But I broke this news that he was having this affair, and it was like, it was headline news. It was really a big thing. It never occurred to me during the time that I was writing it or exposing him that I was the woman he was having an affair with. That piece of information just sort of skipped me, but there's a plan for me beyond my wildest imagination. God has just this infinite amount that he wants to give to all of us if we just suit up, show up, and let it happen. But what I was going to tell you about before I got to this place is that as a result of being human, I have had pain in the last 24 years. Painful things have happened. But I have never in 24 years been in the kind of pain that I was in at 8.5 months away from my last drink. 8.5 months of not drinking, coming here twice a week, not drinking, coming here, not drinking, coming here. 8.5 months, I was in the greatest pain that I've ever been in, the pain of not drinking and not recovering. I have never experienced a greater pain than the pain of not drinking and not recovering. And 8.5 months away from my last drink, that pain drove me to my knees. And on my knees, I took the first step of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. You see, powerless, if you're a strong woman, I suppose if you're a strong man, I've just never met one to confirm this with, but yeah, I love the laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. For all of you who are offended, it's so healing here. If you're a strong person, it is very difficult to have anything to do with the word powerless. But at 8.5 months away from my last drink, what I knew for me is that the powerless of my disease simply was this. Whenever I drink alcohol, I cannot guarantee my behavior. When I put alcohol into my body, I cannot predict my behavior. And I cannot tell you when I will or will not stop drinking. That whenever I do battle with alcohol, I lose. Whenever I get into the ring with alcohol, I lose. Whether I'm fighting it because I'm drinking it or I'm fighting it because you're drinking it. Whenever I do battle with alcohol, I lose. And my life had become unmanageable. Alcohol had become my mother, my father, my friend, my God, my lover, my companion, my support. And at some point it had turned. I think it was in the middle of my first drink, but I could never be sure. At some point it had turned and began to strip me of self-esteem, self-worth, dignity, decency, honesty, pride, integrity, all the things we have going for us as human beings. And by the time I got here, it had taken it all.
alcohol controlled every area of my life. It controlled where I would live, where I would work, the people I would run with, and eventually the people I would run from. And that was my unmanageability. I had no choices. When I drink alcohol, I have no choices. When I drink alcohol, I'm to live the same way day after day after day, and I have no choices. That was the unmanageability, and that was the powerlessness. But for me, it took 8.5 months of not drinking to get far enough away from my last drink to see the evidence of my alcoholism. You all saw it when I came in. But you gave me the dignity to do what I had to do for as long as I had to do it, until I got far enough away from my last drink to see the evidence of my alcoholism. And I'm eternally grateful for that. I am so grateful that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous understood the traditions, and that you never told me I had to leave. All you ever said to me was keep coming back for as long as you had to say it, until I got far enough away from my last drink to see the evidence of my alcoholism. And I wish I could tell you then that I looked at the rest of the steps, knew there was a solution to the problems of my life, worked them all in the first week and skyrocketed to recovery, but that's not the case. I've never worked any of the steps until my back was against the wall. The pain was so great that it was do it or die, and I had no other choice. Under those circumstances, I became very willing to look at the next one of the 12 steps of recovery and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to talk just for a minute, because we're almost out of time. I also forgot to tell you I was a compulsive talker, but the good news is I know the rules apply to me, so the meeting will end long before dark. I want to tell you for a minute the power for me of the steps, because every once in a while I hear somebody say to a newcomer, don't leave before the miracle happens, and then we don't tell them what the miracle is. I'm going to tell you for me, and this is just for me, what the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous is. In working the steps, in the minute I was powerless, and in step two, looking at the fact that there was hope, that through taking a series of actions, that there was hope that my life could get different. In step three, I simply made a decision. How do you want to live? Chronic alcoholic, powerless, or do you want to go with the people who are telling you there's hope? That's the decision they're asking us to make in step three. Hey, I think I'll go with hope. And I made the decision. But the book says, although our decision was final, it had very little permanent effect unless immediately followed by action. The decision in step three does nothing in regards to my life until I do something. And the something I had to do was write an inventory. And I wrote it the way the book says. I made the columns. And in doing the fifth step with me, and I wish I could tell you it happened this quickly, but in doing the fifth step with another alcoholic, what happened, that big brick wall that I had built between me and you, when I did my fifth step, that wall didn't fall down. When I did my fifth step, one brick came out of that wall. One lousy, crappy brick out of the wall. But every time I shared with another alcoholic, another brick has come out of that wall. And this afternoon, I have no brick wall between me and you. The brick wall is gone, and I've never planned to live this way. I've always been too afraid to live this way. I've always been afraid to live without the wall between me and you, because you might hurt me. You might disappoint me, and you might let me down. And you know what the truth is? You do sometimes disappoint me. You do sometimes hurt me. You do sometimes let me down. Even the saints in Alcoholics Anonymous, you do sometimes hurt me, disappoint me, and let me down. The difference is that you've taught me how to respond differently to that. The difference is that you have given me the strength and the hope and the courage to continue to choose to recover no matter how badly you hurt me and disappoint me. You've said to me, stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how hurt or disappointed or let down you are. Stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let us give you the courage and strength you need to continue to walk through it. Don't run away. Don't run away. Don't run away. Step 6 and 7 for me are the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Step 6 and 7, when I did my 7th step, what it says in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous happened to me. I walked through the archway to freedom. I walked away from the person I have been all of my life to start to become the person God intended for me to be. And I believe that was the miracle. I had spent my whole life believing the show that I was putting on for you. I had spent my whole life living in justification, rationalization, and in denial. Step 7 for me gave me the opportunity to walk away. The best I've ever described myself when I came here was an animal with latent human tendencies. that's what walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because the steps were, because step seven for me gave me the opportunity to start to become the person God intended for me to be. As a result of you sharing with me how to live life, I become very kind, very loving, very nurturing, very caring. Of course, another talent is codependency, and I have to recover from it, but... I love the person who I am. I'm tempted to write a book, Women Who Love Themselves Too Much. And I think too many people do leave before they give themselves red jams. Too many people leave Alcoholics Anonymous before they give themselves an opportunity to start to become the person God intended for them to be. 8 and 9 for me are conventional ways of getting rid of conventional guilt. I felt guilt because I was guilty. I've done a lot of things to a lot of people for one more drink. The great debate in Alcoholics Anonymous. Put yourself on the top of the list. Put yourself on the top. I'm going to tell you what. If I had put myself on the top, number one on my list, I would have never gotten to number two. If I belong anywhere on that list, I belong on the bottom. Because what my experience is why I did everything I did for one more drink. Everything I did for me. I was number one on the list before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. The Americans were about getting right with you. They weren't about me taking lots of bubble baths. The Americans were about me getting right with you. About living my life differently. About learning how to be a daughter. Learning how to be a sister. Learning how to be a mother. Learning how to be a friend. Acting contrary to how I felt, doing things that I didn't want to do simply because somebody else told me to do it, being in places that I didn't really want to be in simply because you told me as a daughter that's what you did. Living my life differently than I had ever lived it. That was the amend. Not sorry, 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 sorry. I said sorry all my life. Sorry, sorry, sorry. And then I'd do it again. Then I'd get caught. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Then I'd do it again. It wasn't about sorry, it was about living my life differently. And the only way I knew how to do that was to come sit here in the middle of you. In the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned how to live my life differently. And in doing steps 8 and 9 and living my life differently and getting right with you, do you know what I can do today? And I may do it tonight. I can nod out in the middle of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. As a result of getting right with you and getting right with God, I have inside of me this afternoon what Dick had inside of him when I was 40 years sober. I have a serenity and a peace, and I'm right with you and I'm right with God as a result of working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 10, 11, and 12 give me the privilege of being here. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to continue to choose to recover, and I don't have it. Coward drinking news. I did that on a daily basis for 13 years. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to continue to choose to recover. I need you more this afternoon than I needed you when I came to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have what I like to call them quality problems today. And I need your strength and your courage more today than I needed you when I came to the doors. And you give it to me every time I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And using step 10, continuing to write about it, talk about it, ask God to remove the defect, make amends if necessary, and then turn your attention to somebody you can help. What is it I can do for you? How can I be of service? I have a disease that manifests itself in selfishness and self-centeredness. What I've learned here is how can I be of service to you? What is it I can do for you? How can I add to your life? In being of service, God takes care of my stuff. And in step 11, my prayer in the morning is very simply, thy will be done. I'm really pretty naive because I believe the rest of the day is God's business. My prayer at night I offer to you is it's kind of scary. But my prayer at night is, dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. And when I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight, it will hold me in good stead. It will keep me as I'm driving down the freeway from flipping somebody off because they've cut in front of me and slammed on the brakes because I'm the old lady going too slow. It will keep me from being in a line at Save On in the 12 items or less, counting the guy in front of me. He's got 13. I gotta tell him about it. Let me bang my card into him just to get his attention. Let me, let me holler at somebody. It will keep me in good stead. Not out of virtue. Not because I don't want to count his items and ramp my card into him. But because I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight. Dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. It will hold me in good stead. And step 12 was the greatest gift you've ever given me. The opportunity to take a little of my past and give it to another alcoholic. And I'll tell you what, I have done everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I share that with you because sometimes I hear my story and I think, God, any minute now they're going to start calling me St. Patty. No. I have done everything wrong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been incredibly judgmental. I love taking other people's inventory. I love gossip. If I'm not hearing any, I'm going to have to start making some up. I love gossip. I'm judgmental. I've slept with newcomers. I'd do it again in a minute if I had to. I mean, we tell them, you're the most important person in the room. And then, theoretically, we ignore them for a year. I mean, it's not right, but I charge for 12-step calls. I was visiting my mother one Sunday, and I got a call from someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they had gotten a 12-step call, and this woman had been in and out of AA just in and out. And, we say the door swings both ways, and we always say, welcome back, and all that's true, but, sometimes with your in and out, sometimes we get scared. Sometimes I get scared, because that could be me. Sometimes people don't get to come back. Sometimes people die, and they don't get to come back, and we get scared. And apparently this woman had called, and she had called so many times, and everybody in the town had gone 12-step to her, and nobody wanted to go. I mean, this woman could not find anybody to go with her on this 12-step call, and she called my mother's house, was hoping I might be there, and I was, and I went. And we went to this lady's house. I'm going to tell you what, if money could keep you sober, this woman would never have had a problem. She had this big old driveway. It took us about a quarter of a tank of gas just to get to her house. And she had an oak door that was at least a foot thick, and they are very, very expensive. I'm clicking it off as I'm going up there, and we went in the house, and this woman came down the circular staircase, kind of like the old Raleigh Hills commercial. She had on a gown that was set at puke and wine stains on it. I mean, it was chops, and she gets along down there, and I sent the other woman into the kitchen to make coffee, and I look at this drunk girl. I said, you know what? I understand why you can't stay sober, and it's not your fault. The people in this town will not tell you the secret to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I live in a different county, so I can't just give you the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous, but for $100, And I should have asked for more, because she pulled $100 out of her pocket quicker than I could even take a breath. And she handed it to me, and I put it in my pocket, and I looked her in the eye, and I said, the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous is, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. And if you don't get drunk, your life will get different. And the other woman came out in the kitchen, and I said, we don't have to be here anymore, and we left. And when that woman took a cake for 1 year of sobriety, I gave her back not her $100, but I gave her back $100. And never once during that year did she ever tell anybody I charged her for that 12-step call. And I need to tell you, that woman is a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. She does a lot of age tonight. She works with a lot of newcomers. because you learn the deal the way I learned to do the deal. What is it I can do for you? How can I be of service? I'm going to end now. I know you're sad, but my bottle is almost empty, and I have a 15-minute bladder. That's the indicator for me. It's time to go now. I'm going to end with a story that I like really, really well because it puts it all together for me. But it's a story of the man that goes to see St. Peter, and he asks St. Peter to show him heaven and hell. And St. Peter takes him to a room, and it says hell on the door, but they open the door, and this guy's amazed because inside this room, it's like a banquet. Tables and tables and tables of food, any kind of food you could ever think of, as much food as you could ever, ever, ever want. And the people in their room, amongst all that food, are hungry, they're dying, they're starving. And the reason that they're hungry is they've got those long, you know, those wooden spoons that people that cook use. I mean, they're tied to their wrist, and the spoon's just a little bit too long, and they can't quite get the food to their mouth. And so they're sitting amongst plenty, and they're starving. And that's how I was before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was out there amongst plenty, and I was dying. And then he took him to a room that said heaven on the outside, and they opened the door, and inside that room was exactly the same scene. A huge banquet. Tables and tables and tables of food, as much food as you could ever imagine, any kind of food you'd ever want. And the people in that room had those long spoons tied to their hands, too, and the spoons were just a little bit too long, and they couldn't quite get the food to their mouth. But the people in that room were hungry, and they were content, and they were full. And the difference was is that one man was taking a spoonful of food, and he was feeding the man across the table. And he was taking a spoonful of food and feeding the woman next to him, and she was feeding somebody else. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works for me. I don't have my own answers. I have to come here, and I have to let you feed me. And every once in a while, if I'm lucky, I get to give a spoonful of this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous to another human being. And you don't have to have 10 years or 5 years or 1 year. If you have one day, you have something to feed to the man or woman walking through the door. If you have one day, you have experience, strength, and hope to share with the person coming through the door. If you've got one day, you got the strength to give to the person on your right so that they can choose to stay sober for one more day, and the courage to give to the person on your left so that they can make the decision to stay sober one more day. If you got one day, you have something to give to the person sitting next to you and the new person walking through the door. When I was 4 days sober, an old man told me if I didn't drink, I wouldn't get drunk. If I didn't get drunk, my life would get different, and he didn't lie to me. And I end with this because it's been my experience, and I pray God it's your experience. It's a line that in chapter 5 that we already heard read tonight. It's a line that says, there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Thank you.